Okay, so what did you do before the Food Network?
Well, let's see. Before Food Network, my first job after I graduated from college was at Good Morning America. So I worked at Good Morning America for about 5 years before I quit, and then I started working for the Food Network in 1999. And then I was at Food Network for about, I want to say 6 or 7 years. I can't remember when I left, but I was there for a long time.
Okay, so the next question would have been, how is your job different? But obviously, because Food Network is food, and Good Morning America is like a...
Yeah, so like Good Morning America was more about news and current events. And my job back then was to get research. So a lot of the guests who would come on the show, they would be interviewed by the host. And so we'd have a whole department of writers. And the writers would need research on who was coming to visit the set, whether it was a politician, a celebrity, someone who wrote a book. So it was my job to get all the information. And this was before we had Google. So we would have certain kind of computer software systems that would be able to get us access to newspapers and news magazines and profiles and transcripts of television shows. So my job is to get research, and then I also helped set up shoots. So let's say we send a reporter somewhere in the country to do a story on a town or someone who lives in that town. It was my job to then coordinate that shoot, you know, help with the travel plans, make sure that the reporter and the producer got all the research, made sure that the location we were going to knew we were coming, what time we were arriving, what we would need. So you kind of set up the travel plans for the production team who was going to go out there. So you kind of do a lot of different things when you're working for like a morning news show.
Yeah. And then next one is, why did you choose to quit and then switch to the food entertainment?
Because I love food. I've loved food ever since I was a kid. So I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and my grandfather actually had a Chinese takeout restaurant. Nothing fancy, nothing very special. People probably don't even remember it. It's no longer here. But every day after school, that's where I would go, and my grandparents would babysit my brother and me, and they would raise us in a kitchen. So we had a small little living room in the back, but the main part of their house was a restaurant. So you were a customer, you'd order your food, there would be a big kitchen, and then there's a back where we'd all hang out, and then there's a backyard where they grew a lot of vegetables and fruit. And my grandparents, they lived upstairs, so there was like an apartment upstairs, so they lived there. So my whole childhood was inside a kitchen. And so I think it inspired me to watch cooking shows, because back then there was like PBS, and you'd watch Julia Child and Grand Chef. So I would watch that. I started reading food magazines when I was a teenager, and then I just loved playing in the kitchen. My mom didn't really want me in the kitchen. She thought I was gonna make a big mess. But I think when your parents say don't do that, you wanna do it more. So I ended up playing with food more and more, but you know, you don't think, oh, I'm gonna make a career or a life or a job out of doing food. But so I went to NYU and I studied film and television and journalism, and I figured I would work in news and do something in the media. But then Food Network was created in 1993. I graduated in 94. I didn't work for them right away, but let's just say that if I was born in a different time and place, there would be no Food Network, and I probably would be doing something very different with my life. Probably something food related, but luckily I was able to take my college education and merge it with what I'm really passionate about. So the reason why I left Good Morning America is because I was able to then do something all food and less about news.
What was your favorite show to work on?
There are lots. It's like asking your favorite color. Yeah. You know, or your best friend is. I loved working on Everyday Italian with Giada De Laurentiis, because that was a new show for her. And I had to live in Los Angeles 4 months every year. So we would rent a house. I would live in that house. Someone else would live in that house. And we would be there for 14 hours every day doing her show. So we created a kitchen in the garage, we rearranged the real kitchen in the house to make it look like a TV set a little bit more. We blocked all the windows so no daylight would come in. And you just learn how to make food look beautiful. You know, you work with a camera guy, you work with a stylist, and you just know how to take ingredients and make them look delicious on TV. And you also understand the personality of ingredients. Like, oh, that basil's gonna wilt really quickly. So you have to understand how ingredients are gonna work under lights and under warm conditions. And so I got to live in Los Angeles briefly, and I got to work on that show. And you get to like work with team members, so the camera guy, the cooks in the kitchen, and then you learn about working with people and becoming friends with them. So that was a very memorable job. And then the other job that was really memorable was a show called My Country, My Kitchen, which we shot way back in 2001 or 2002, and that took me around the world. The goal of that show was to find a chef and ask that chef to take you to the country where that inspired that person to become a chef. So it could be someone who cooks Mexican food and they take you to Mexico City and you kind of meet the people who inspired the chef and you taste the food that said, I'm gonna spend my rest of my life doing food. Or you go to someone who, we even went to Vietnam and we visited a woman who, her family fled Vietnam in the 70s and she hadn't been back since then and she was gonna go see her 100-year-old grandmother for the first time in 20-some-odd years. So that gave me the chance to go to many parts of the world that I probably would have gone on my own to kind of see how other cultures live, what they eat, and meet other people. And you realize that no matter who you are or where you come from, food brings people together and it makes everyone really happy. Mm-hmm. So those two jobs were very memorable.
What led you to creating your own production company?
Well, I always loved being a producer out on the road and actually getting my hands dirty and touching food and being behind the camera and making it look really nice. And when I was at Food Network, they wanted me to do less of that and to be more of a manager. You know, can you oversee shows? Can you work with production companies and help them deliver shows that we want on the air? So I got to learn the business side of doing television, but I missed getting my hands dirty. You know, I was in an office, a lot of phone calls, a lot of meetings, and those are important jobs, and I respect that a lot. But I think when you get older and you realize and you're given opportunities, you decide, what do I really want to do? And do I take a chance? So I took a chance and I left to start my own company. And when you start your own company, you're one of millions of people out there who want to do the very same thing. And I figured the worst that could happen is if it doesn't work, I can always go out and look for a job again for somebody else. But you live once, so why not take a chance, right? Even if you make mistakes and it doesn't work out, there's a lesson to be learned in that. So that's why I decided to take a chance so I can go back out, get my hands dirty, and do food shows. And hopefully Food Network and other networks will see what we can do and hopefully hire us. So it was a big chance, but it was worth it.
In your opinion, how have the shows that have been on the Food Network changed over time? Because that's like kind of what I'm basing my project off of.
Sure. I think if you look at food shows, even before Food Network, they used to be on PBS. And it was all in a studio where someone was in a kitchen. And we call them how-to shows, dump and stir shows. And it really is about one person who's saying, I'm going to make this today. And they really teach you how to make a recipe. So that way, when you're finished watching the show, you're inspired to get the recipe, go out, buy the ingredients, and then make it yourself. So that happened for the 70s, the 80s, and kind of in the 90s. And then once people started making food as a form of entertainment on television, that kind of has gone through many different evolutions. So now you have cooking competition shows.
Yeah.
So people are now competing, and many different networks do that kind of show. You have a lot of shows that are called travelogue shows where one person is the host and they take you either around America or they take you around the world and they show you all the different places where you can go eat. Let's see, other shows. You still have cooking shows and duck and stir shows, but they try to make it more lifestyle. So you're learning how Trisha Yearwood cooks at home, but you also get a peek into her lifestyle. You have the Pioneer Woman. She's cooking at home, and she's doing the same thing they did back in the 70s and 80s, but you're in her home, and so you meet her family. And I think when you get a slice of their lifestyle, people at home feels a little bit more relatable. It's not a studio. It's not someone standing there under these lights, and they're just cooking a recipe. You feel like, hey, if that mom of, you know, three kids can pull off this meal, then maybe I can do it too, because I can kind of relate to that family. So a lot of the cooking shows now are more about lifestyle cooking shows. You kind of get a peek into your life and they show you how to make their favorite dishes. So I think, you know, we're also trying to figure out what's the next big thing.
Yeah.
You know, like what's the next show that everyone else is going to want to do? So everyone's curious to know what that is and figuring it out and getting an audience to watch it.
I noticed that, like, I was looking at the shows that have been released by the, and aired by the Food Network, and they used to all be just people showing how to make recipes, but then you look into, like, the early 2000s and all these, like, competitive shows are coming on.
Right. And, you know, think about it, like, back then, food shows used to be on Sunday in the afternoon, right? Food Network, people would tend to watch it during the day. If you're watching shows at nighttime, think about all the other TV shows on other channels.
Yeah.
You have a lot of, like, reality shows, you have scripted shows, comedies, you also have, like, HBO now and Showtime doing really, really, like, provocative, interesting, you know, television shows. So you're competing with that audience. Now, it might change, but, you know, the ratings and the people who watch, let's say, HBO versus Food Network are very different. But you can't put a Dump and Stir show at 8 o'clock when something else is airing on HBO that's really, really interesting. The budgets are very different, too. So I think, you know, channels that are all lifestyle, like HGTV or DIY, they're trying to figure out, well, what can we do at night to keep people entertained that they might want to watch it as much as they watch the other stuff on television. So that's why it's less cooking, because I don't know, I just ate dinner, maybe I don't want to watch someone cooking food because I'm full, but I want to watch someone take me to a different city and be like, hey, if you're in Chicago, this is where you should go eat, and maybe I can more interested in watching that.
Mm-hmm. What have you learned in your time with the Food Network and your production company?
It's really important to realize the biggest lesson is that it's not about you. People hire you because you might have a certain talent and you have a certain skill, you have a passion for something, but it's a very collaborative process. So even though we do shows, I have a boss. I have many bosses. Every show I do has a different boss, and it's important to listen to what they want. And it's also collaborative. You kind of say, well, how about we do this? And they say, well, how about we do this? So you both kind of meet in the middle. And by running a company, you learn that people who work for you are really important. I wouldn't be here today if I didn't have all these folks working with me, because they spend hours and hours researching, working, traveling, sitting in the edit room, and they take what our initial idea is and they bring it to life. And so when I work with a camera guy, he knows how to light things, frame things on television that I never would know how to do. You give me a camera, I have no idea how to do that, right? So I gotta rely on an expert to do that. When we have all the footage, there are hours and hours of footage. I can try to put it together, but an editor does nothing but look at footage, think about music, think about how to cut it together. They breathe new life into the footage. So when I watch something after it's been edited, I'm like, oh my God, that's better than I thought. And I might give some notes like, oh, you know, we need more of this, less of that. But again, it's very collaborative. So you always want to work with people where they feel included. And the other thing that's kind of important that no one tells you about, you never know if that person sitting across from you is going to be your boss one day. So you always treat people with respect. Even if you don't agree with them, you listen to them, because you never know. That person might one day be in charge, and you don't want to like put a bad taste in that person's mouth. So it's a lot of respect and trying to like talk things out with people. And if it doesn't work out and you just don't get along, you can always choose not to work with that person, but you always want to be nice to people.
When you're like creating a new show, how do you decide like what chef is on that show? Or
I think kind of like a movie star, they have to have that it factor. What is it about them that you're just like, wow, I just can't stop listening to them, looking at them? There's something magnetic about their personality. You know, sometimes you go to a party and you're in a room with a lot of people, but then someone walks in and they're just the star of that room. They just grab everyone's attention. So when you meet people who potentially be in front of the camera, if let's say they're a chef, if you think about what they study, they went to culinary school. They worked in restaurants. Their job is just look down and cook and make delicious food and serve it to the customers and make them happy. You're not hiring them to be a performer in the kitchen. They're there to cook and serve. So the job for us is to take someone who might have a great personality naturally, has a food skill or food knowledge, and then train them to kind of bring those two together so that way they learn how to cook and talk at the same time. So for us, whenever we work with someone who's never been on TV, I have to teach them to just look up at the camera because they just want to look down, cook, not burn themselves, not cut themselves. I'm like, okay, but you need to make sure you look at me at the camera once in a while. And you have to teach them how to smile. You have to teach them how to talk in sound bites because sometimes people can go and tell a story and they go on and on and on. You're thinking, okay, where's this going? This is taking forever. And so when you're on TV, you have to learn how to like take what your thought is and condense it into like almost bullet points. And so that comes with practice. So that's the hardest part, is like finding someone who's got that sparkle, and then how do you then kind of shine that person, kind of like a coal and you're making it into a diamond. You gotta work with that person, have some patience with them. And either they get it or they don't. But everyone always has the chance to like really be great.
When you're like thinking of a new idea for a show or something, what happens, like, how do you just get it? How do you get it from that point to like it actually being on the Food Network?
Well, one show, it's called Man Fire Food, which we do on Cooking Channel. And that came from a meeting that I had with an executive at a network. And this network has nothing to do with food. But they're like, you know, we didn't want to do food. And our audience are all, they tend to be men. So what do you think we could do that you think our audience would like to watch? And so during this conversation, I'm like, all right, well, what do guys in particular like to do? I'm not saying women can't do it, but what do guys like to do? Well, they like to barbecue. Like, you always see the guys behind the grill. They just love going out, and they love grilling meat. You know, they love fire. Like, we all love fire. There's something very primal about that. Even, you know, having a fireplace going, there's something very mesmerizing about it. And so I was like, you know, it's not like men, and there's fire, and there's food. And she stopped me, and she said, I like that as a show title. What's the show? And I'm like, I don't know. She's like, figure it out. So then I went to the bookstore, I looked at all the cookbooks, and I thought, okay, well, what can I do? And so I started coming up with the idea of how can we take fire, which is so basic and so everyday, it's almost like water or air, but how do I make a show about the fire? And so I came up with the idea of how do people cook with fire around the world? And if you start looking at it carefully, you'll realize that in Latin America, or South America, you'll see people cooking big fires and doing whole cows or whole lamb, and they just roast the entire beast over a fire. I've never seen that in the United States, so I thought, well, that's interesting. And then you start looking at what they do in Asia, what they do in Europe. And so I started writing on a piece of paper, kind of like we do a book report. You just start writing it down. What's my idea? Who are we seeing? Where are we going? What are we going to get out of it? And when you write this as a pitch, you have to kind of pitch it as a, how do you see the show playing out? How does the show start? It's divided into four acts. If it's a half-hour show, it's divided into six acts. If it's a one-hour show, and what's the storyline? What's the hook? What's going to make someone watch from the beginning all the way to the end? So I wrote this whole treatment, sent it to them. They liked it, but they said, you know what? We decided that overall we don't want to do food right now. We're not into it. I'm like, okay. So it stayed in my laptop for a few years. And then I started working for Cooking Channel, doing shows for them, and I said, hey, you know, I wrote this treatment. This network didn't want it, but maybe you want it. She read it, and she's like, well, I like it, but we probably don't want to travel international because we like to focus on America. Can you tweak it and just make it about America? So I rewrote it and focused more on barbecue restaurants or people who have weird contraptions that cook a fire. So this one guy I discovered, he took an airplane, a Cessna airplane, gutted it out, made it into a smoker. So, like, where they keep all the luggage and stuff, they put all the firewood.
Big smoker.
Yeah, where the engine was, you open it up, and inside is, like, all the meat gets cooked inside. They just close everything up to keep the smoke inside. The plane doesn't fly anymore, but it became a smoker. So once you start realizing that there are some people out there who just love being inventive, and they take kind of, like, pieces of cinder block, pieces of metal, and they kind of create something to cook with fire and smoke, that became the story. So I pitched it, she liked it. We had to figure out who the host was gonna be. It took a year for us to figure that out. We shot a little test pilot with him in Texas, and then we got greenlit to do 10 episodes. And that was 6 years ago. So we're now in season 6 of Vampire Food, and it's been on Cooking Channel for 6 years now. So what you do is you come up with an idea in your head, and then you have to think, who am I gonna pitch this to? Who's their audience? Who are they gonna watch it? Because I can't pitch this to MTV, they're not gonna care. So you have to think what the audience wants to watch, because if you might have a great idea, but no one wants to buy it, it's not going to go anywhere. So then you kind of make it into a TV show, and then either you shoot a little bit of it, the network gives you money to shoot it, and then everyone looks at it, and hopefully you get the green light to do the show.
Obviously, that's like what people like are thinking about when you're trying to think of a show, but once the show is made, do you pay attention to like the ratings and what the viewers say and try to change things?
I mean, because the network owns all the shows, like we just get hired to do it. I don't own the rights, they own everything. So they're the ones who keep track on the ratings. If the ratings are good, they're going to say, great, we love it, we want more of this, less of this, we're going to go into season two. And then you're going to do another season. If it's just doing okay, but the network feels it has a chance, then you kind of go back to the drawing board and try to fix the show for another season, and then you make some changes to it. If it doesn't do well, the ratings aren't there, it's not going to get picked up, and the show kind of gets canceled or it doesn't get renewed. So for a company, you have to have more than one show, because if all your eggs are in that one basket and the show's no longer happening, then everyone's out of work. So we have to have several shows happening at the same time, so that if one show is not working, at least we have the other one. And if we're doing really well with two shows, there's going to be a shelf life. Like, every show gets canceled at some point. Friends got canceled at some point, no matter how well it did. Seinfeld got canceled. Your show will get canceled at some point. So you have to have a backup plan and have other shows kind of in the pipeline waiting to happen.
Okay. Just before we keep going, I forgot you said to videotape it. I figured it could just record the...
Yeah.
But can you, like, maybe take a picture or something?
Yeah, I'll take a picture.
Okay. Is there a major... I don't really know how to word this question,
sure.
But, like, is there a major difference between, like, the work that you do on each show? Because I know you do, like, a dessert show, a barbecue show,
yeah.
An Italian food show. So how does, like, the work differ on those shows?
Well, when you do a barbecue show, it's all outside. So you're building a fire outside, you've got a host of a show, you've got a guest, and it's more, and you've got two cameras, and you're worried about the rain coming. So that's one way of doing a show. For Unique Sweets, we just go to a restaurant, and we go to a restaurant for one day, we shut the place down, and we take over, we light it beautifully, and we say, we need to have all these ingredients, you need to have it at this stage. We write a whole script, we give them a list of ingredients and what stages the food needs to be at, and we spend all day shooting step by step how a dish is made and beauty shots of the food. And then for that show, Unique Sweets, we then send all the talking heads, all the people you see on camera talking, we send them to all those restaurants, we have them eat all the dishes that we featured, and then we get some footage of them eating on set, and then they all come to New York in our little studio, so it looks like they're in a candy bar room, and we ask them about all the dishes. And so that's a different show where it's like, it's all food photography, it's sit-down interviews, and then you merge it together. Whereas Vampire Food is, it's almost like documentary style. You're rolling with two cameras, they're having their conversation, you kind of tweak, and you have them do some extra lines, but that's a different kind of a show. And then if I did a competition show, that'd be in a studio with lots of people and like a bigger crew and lots of cameras and lots of lights.
Okay. Who are the major like sponsors and like advertisers and whatever for the network? And does that like, do they help the popularity and the success of the Food Network?
That I actually don't know.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah, because I don't work with them.
Yeah.
All I know is like Food Network or any network will call me and be like, hey, we want to do this show. I'm like, okay. And we figure out what the budget is. We get paid a certain amount of money. Where they get that money from and how it works with the advertisers, they don't share any of that information with you.
You think you said that like the people, like the lifestyle shows and people just making recipes or like the competitive shows like Chopped or whatever, do you think those are making the Food Network more successful?
I think so. I mean, I think if it wasn't doing well, it wouldn't be on the air because
yeah.
You're losing money if a show's not doing well, right? I think we definitely have a saturation of competition shows and people are still watching it, but I think everyone wants the next big thing. What's the next big thing that everyone else is not going to want to like copy, right? So I think every network is trying to figure out what can food be that is going to be something everyone wants to copy. You know, you have like competition shows, but you also have people like Anthony Bourdain, Andrew Zimmerman, Guy Fieri, where they're so popular and people love watching them that kind of no matter what they do, people watch, right? But that's a certain status that's really, really hard to obtain. Like to be so dynamic, so popular that no matter what you do, people want to watch it. So Rachel Ray had that also. You know, there are many people who are on TV who've been on TV for 20 years and, you know, there's a reason for it. They're really good at what they do. But everyone, so people ideally will take the famous person, the next big show, and put it together. But sometimes one exists without the other.
Okay. Last one, not as like about the technical stuff, but like, who was your favorite chef to work with on the set or whatever?
That is a hard one too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It goes back to that whole color thing. I think, let's just say this. I'm just lucky that I get to work with many different people. And there are some people who are just a natural. And it makes my job easy. Because they are smart, they know what they're doing, they know what we want. And so once the camera starts rolling, they just perform. And you're like, oh my God, that was great. I don't have to redo it again. This is awesome. And then there are people who struggle a lot more because they're not great, but they're nice, they're hardworking, and you want to see them win. So they might take a little bit more time and, like, you know, nurturing, but it pays off in the end. You know, I wouldn't say there's anyone I don't want to work with. You know, there are people who may not have been the best experience. And I was like, huh. But again, it goes back to the what lesson do you learn? How do you then work with the more difficult? Because if you can learn how to work with difficult people or people who are not really good at what they do, then it just makes you smarter. You know what I mean? And people want to hire you because you have that skill set. So there is no favorite because they're all different. And I will like eating with them. I like shooting with them. I like collaborating with them. And they all challenge me in different ways.